We've been talking for some time about, you know, spiritual formation, becoming the people God made us to be and all that jazz. You know, you've heard me say that so many, many times. I mean, we've been in Proverbs like 6 or 7 weeks already. And before that, it was 2 or 3 months of stuff about, you know, becoming better, I guess. Becoming the people that God wants us to be. And, you know, it's so easy for that to turn into self-help type stuff, you know. Not that self-help is bad necessarily, but I just, you know, I want us all, I think we all here probably know, but I want to make sure we explicitly know that's not what we're talking about. In this line, in this song, it says, we sing, it says, "You're making me like you, clothing me in white." And all of this stuff we've been talking about for these months, it's about becoming like Jesus, right? And it's not self-help, but it's also not being, you know, struck with this magic wand and we're suddenly, you know, different people or better people or the people God made us to be. As we started out back in the beginning talking about this partnership that the Spirit of God enters into, you know, with us. "You're making me like you, clothing me in white, bringing beauty from ashes." And clothing me in white and bringing beauty from ashes is not just the ultra, you know, it's not the typical religious stuff. Not only the typical religious stuff that we think about, you know, following a certain set of rules and, you know, being this religious person. It's about all of this stuff we've been talking about, you know, for months and months. It has to do with our emotional health. It's about, has to do with our decision making processes and the types of decisions that we make. It has to do with our finances and what we do with money. It has to do with how we treat each other. It has to do with our marriages and our parenting and all this stuff, right? That's what it looks like to be clothed in white, to become the type of person God made you to be. "You're making me like you, clothing me in white, bringing beauty from ashes. For you will have your bride," right? "For you will have your bride, free of all her guilt and rid of all her shame. And known by her true name." Christ will have his bride be free of all of her guilt and rid of all of her shame. That's what he is determined to do. He's going to do it. And I'm really glad of that. That's his prerogative. That's how he feels about us. He is determined that we be free of all of our guilt and rid of all of our shame and known by our true name and known to be the sorts of people that we've been talking about for these months. And that's why we've been talking about all this stuff. That's why I sing. So, with that said, we'll continue to look, our look in the book of Proverbs, with that being our, you know, that being kind of the paradigm that we're looking all this stuff through. Does that make sense? Okay. In Proverbs 3, verse 9, it says, "Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruit of all your crops, and your barns will be filled to overflowing, and your vats will brim over with new wine." This is one of those statements that can be twisted and has been twisted in this really perverse way to make it seem like the more that you give to the church or you send money into the preacher on TV or whatever the case may be, that God is going to, you know, send you a check in the mail on Monday. All right. But it can also be twisted in such a way that We think that our giving or our generosity or what we do with our, you know, how much money we put in the box also equates to how good of a Christian we are, right? It's just a very transactional thing. But why would we, number one, how do we honor the Lord with our wealth? And we're going to be talking about, in at least in a, maybe next week or the week after, whatever, our, kind of our, where we'll land with Proverbs is we'll be talking about wealth and we're talking about money. It's one of the, because that really is one of the top two or three things, top, you know, overall topics in Proverbs. It's very, very important. And before we talk about, you know, what we do with our money and budgeting and building wealth and working hard and all that, I want to make sure we start with this foundation here about honoring the Lord with your wealth, right? And that's what we're talking about today. Because it's going to sound like, as we read some stuff, and as you guys have spent time in Proverbs, it sounds like if someone's poor, it's because it's their own fault, right? Because they're lazy, right? Right? I mean, it kind of explicitly says that. Is that true? Hopefully you get the right answer. What? Sometimes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. That is exactly right. Sometimes. All right? I mean, how many people have you known that have every advantage in the world and every opportunity and they just act like an idiot and they make stupid decisions and they won't work and they, you know, have this entitlement complex and their life is a wreck because of that, right? Uh-huh. But also, there's this, an unplowed field produces food for the poor, but injustice sweeps it away. There are also situations in the world where some people are impoverished or lack resources through absolutely zero fault of their own, right? You know, the idea as Americans that we pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps is... it's a positive, it's a valuable idea and a positive idea, because for those of us that do, you know, have the luxury of being born, you know, in an affluent area or to a, you know, to a good family, and those parents stay together and it's a good home relationship and your support, so you get help with your homework at night and you're able to do well in school and you don't have all these stressors on your life as you're young, you know, forcing you to, you know, forcing your life to go off the tracks. And if you happen to be healthy enough and you happen to be born without any, you know, mental or physical disabilities, all this stuff, right? As long as you have everything in your life falls into place, if you work hard and if you take advantage of opportunities and if with this support structure you're able to make good decisions and you're able to apply yourself, yes, you can, I don't want to say be successful, but that's, I think that's, you can be successful, right? But there's some people for whom none of that's the case. You're not born in an affluent area. Say you're born in, you know, and on Sierra Nino and Pastores in Guatemala in a little shack. You know? Or you're born in Taloha in Tanzania. Right? In those cases, sometimes it doesn't matter how hard you work. You know, you're not going to build wealth, right? There are people who are poor because, for lack of a better way of putting it, they choose to be poor. And there are people who are impoverished because of injustice, right? So sometimes, precisely, in my mind, is precisely the right answer. And what I want to look at today is this. This is kind of the, you know, the idea I want to circle around in a few different ways. Proverbs 29 says, the righteous care about justice for the poor. The righteous care about justice for the poor. And again, we've talked about righteous, right? We've talked about the word righteous, and it means people... of integrity, people who have been made right with God and they're starting to live right as a result. People, that righteous doesn't mean the people who follow all the rules perfectly and therefore you're going to heaven. Righteous means people who are, They're trying to get their life on the right track. And whose lives are on the right track, right? You know, it's us, what we are striving to be. It's righteous. And one aspect of being a person of integrity, it's a person. One aspect of being a disciple of Christ, one aspect of being wise, is another synonym for righteous in a lot of these, you know, double line poems. One aspect of being righteous is caring about justice for the poor, whatever that means. It's about having concern for others, right? Proverbs 14 says, whoever oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker. Isn't that interesting? How do you get to that parallel? And getting to the point where you can make this statement shows how seriously God takes our attitudes and our actions toward the less fortunate people in the world. It says, whoever oppresses the poor shows contempt for their maker, contempt for God. So getting ahead at the expense of other people, just contempt for God. But the counterpoint to that, whoever is kind to the needy honors God. How is this true? Whoever is kind to the needy. And again, it's not saying whoever fixes everything in the world, right? Whoever is kind, who has kindness to the needy, you honor God. How does that honor God? How is being kind to the less fortunate honor God? That's not a rhetorical question. Huh? You love your neighbor, yeah? What?
They're made in his image.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. Right. How is it honoring God when we're kind to others? Showing it, absolutely.
There's a part of like our role of governing and taking dominion,
mm-hmm.
where if poverty limits your ability to do that, mm-hmm. in a way, then like loving people and enabling them to
that's a good point. Right.
More thoroughly is like it's almost like empowering people to do what God designed them to do.
That's exactly right. Right. That's cool. Yeah. Right. Right. I mean, those are two sides of the same coin. You don't get one without the other. Yeah.
Well, God created the needy.
Right.
I think there's a proverb somewhere that says, despise the needy, despising the creator.
Right. Exactly.
Some people false value system disparage someone.
Right. So honoring, you know, these people, whatever their status is, honoring people is a whole lot like honoring God. It's in a way it is part of honoring God, right? What you're saying? They're made in the image of God. And also this is what God does. Shows kindness to those less fortunate, shows kindness to the needy, right? You think of some ways that God does that? Yeah. 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 Proverbs 11 says, one person gives freely, it gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. So if you take this first verse, this first couplet, again, you can twist that and think the more money you put in the box, the more money God's going to put into your bank account, right? I mean, it doesn't work that way all the time or even often. And another withholds unduly but comes to poverty. So if you want to grasp and cling to what you have monetarily, you end up being poor. That doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? But if you expand your meanings of giving, and withholding, and you expand what you're thinking about when it comes to poverty, it starts to make more sense, right? If that twisted version of this is untrue. What kinds of poverty are there in the world? That's also not a rhetorical question. You guys answer that.
Spiritual poverty.
Yeah, spiritual poverty. What other kinds of poverty? Right, yeah.
Or identity.
Poverty of identity or shame, yeah, exactly. What else? What other kinds of poverty are there? And needs are, what kinds of needs are there? That's another way of putting it, I think. Mm-hmm. Right.
It feels like it's the opposite of power. Like poverty is the opposite of power.
I was going to ask, what is the definition of poverty? But yeah, I think you're right. You have, if there's on a scale, it's not necessarily poverty and riches, it's poverty and power.
Poverty.
I think. So you can be poor in terms of your fight. Was somebody else going to say something? Right. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, think about emotional needs and spiritual needs. Relational needs, you know. So it's not just about, when you think about giving in those terms, this starts to make a lot more sense, right? So if you give freely to meet the needs of people who are impoverished in whatever area, you know, whether it's relationally or emotionally or spiritually, I mean, when you pour yourself out, you know, into some situation or into someone else, you gain even more, right? Can you think about an example of that? I think you're probably clear what I'm saying, I hope. Think of an example of that where you're giving, whether it's emotionally or relationally or financially, and you end up building up, and it builds up your resources instead of depletes them.
For me, teaching the women's group.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Korea. Mm-hmm. We invested a lot of money in them, and now they're big trade partners.
Mm-hmm.
We make money off of the things that they produce, the services and goods. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
That's in the natural too.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's absolutely right in the natural and in the spiritual. That's two good, you know, opposite ends of the spectrum type of examples. You know, Kara said that, you know, it's giving and it's, it requires investment to teach, right? To teach others. But it doesn't deplete you. You know, you're built up, you know, through that process and through the relationships that you form, if it's on the right track, right? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Right. 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 Absolutely. Now, with the opposite of that, what about withholding unduly and you end up being impoverished? You're scared to turn loose of these resources, whatever they may be. And so you try to cling to those resources and you end up losing what you have. You end up being impoverished. You end up being poorer as a result. An example of that. Have you ever reserved anything like that? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, financially, right.
Now think about, a little bit about, kind of outside of the Christian perspective is a lot of downtowns and stuff mm-hmm. that people walk away from or kind of abandon.
Right.
If the right person comes along with the right resources and the right vision,
mm-hmm.
they can completely, you know, revitalize that. Now they get it back.
Right.
But they got to have that vision where no one else has.
Right. That's a good, very good example.
I think this really demonstrates a life of faith, verse 24. Mm-hmm. The idea of what is it, the prosperity gospel mm-hmm. so that you'll
get yeah, it. Yeah, right.
I think it's against the whole spirit of
what I agree.
This is talking about. This is the spirit of not getting, but of giving.
Right.
And such a person, Jesus said, you'll just overflow.
That's right.
Give it to your lap if you have
right.
a giving,
yeah.
giving heart. I think financially it applies, obviously,
yeah.
in my life
many times. Yeah, I would have to say I agree with that, you know, for me personally. It, you know, like Steve said, you know, you've seen it happen in our life, and I, you know, and me too. I mean, I have no idea why my life is as good as it is, you know, and why I have enough stuff, you know. It's not because of my work ethic, you know, but... I mean, God's just taking, you know, not just taking care of my family, but just blessed us beyond any sort of, you know, comprehension. So, yeah, I think definitely, you see, the more you pour yourself out into others, and it's, really as a family, it's my wife that does it more than me, but I think the more you pour yourself out into others, the more you gain more. The caution I think I have and the natural reaction I have to hedge against that is that there are lots of people in the world who are generous. I mean, those people in Guatemala, I mean, a lot of those incredibly poor people were very, very generous. You know, they would fix you this meal that you can tell, I mean, it probably cost them a huge portion of their budget for you know, the entire week, right? But so they are generous, but they still don't see that same sort of a financial return on their investment, right? So I think you naturally to have this, I don't want to hedge against that. I think sometimes, like Dr. Jeffrey said, sometimes, you know, I think there's a sometimes there. But in general, I think it's something that's not a sometimes. I think it's an always. A generous person will prosper. And maybe that means financially with your stuff and with your money. But if you're generous... relationally and emotionally, and you pour yourself out into other people. I mean, sometimes that's going to hurt. Sometimes those people will take advantage of you. Sometimes people will hurt you. But at the end of the day, at the end of your life is going to be better than someone who is not generous. Right? Because that's the way we were designed to be. That's the way this world, that's the way God's kingdom works. Right? He's making us like him, right? Clothing us in white. And a huge part of that is generosity in all these aspects of our life, financially, emotionally, relationally, spiritually. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. And I'm sure we can all think of instances where that's not the case, where you've tried to pour yourself out into someone and it gets, you know, we were, I guess you can say we were much younger now when we started this church. There was this, you know, we had a huge part of the vision for our church was being this, was we were seeing that this type of stuff was incredibly important. And that helping others in a, not just, you know, talk you into, you know, coming up to the altar so you can get saved sort of way. Not, there's nothing wrong with that. And it's incredibly important. But helping others in terms of the whole sweep of their lives was important. And the Bible talked a lot about that. And that was a big part of our vision when we started this. And I can remember, so we were like, yeah, we just want to have this place where you can just, we just pour ourselves out into people. And we had this, you know, I think this kind of notion that it's, you know, all sunshine and roses if you just do this, right? So we had these young kids, and they were very young couple. I don't think they were married. I don't remember, but... Very young couple, maybe 19 or 20, something like that, maybe younger, and they had this baby, and they were from one of the girl had a family member, a stepdad or dad or something, in town here. So they moved back here, and you know, they had nothing basically. And so we went, man, and we went shopping, and we took them shopping. We got them all sorts of stuff, and we took, you know, somebody gave a ride to the kid, the boy, you know, man, to get signed up for, you know, what government assistance programs there were, you know, so this, you know, girl could get, you know, stuff for her baby. And we got the dude a job. Okay? We got the guy a job with Shelly's brother, right? And they, you know, they, so we kind of got to know them over this period of a week or two. And everything's just great. Oh, yeah, all right. And so they finally, they got their benefits. They got their food stamps, first time ever. So we went, dropped them off, you know, at the grocery store. Because remember how, what a big, anybody else remember what a big deal it is when you first get married, going to the grocery store, picking out your own stuff? It's kind of like, oh, we're adulting now, right? And we always, me and Shelly always thought it was fun. We always went to the grocery store, you know, on Sunday afternoons after church, and just this big thing. Oh, yeah, this is so fun and awesome. So we dropped these kids off at the grocery store with their food stamps. And they came out with this buggy, I mean, full of Mountain Dew. And then, so I got this kid a job. He started his job the next day. So he went to work. And the next day he went to work. The day after that, not so much. And so sometimes, you know, they just decided that, you know, I'm good. I don't need a job. And it's just... So sometimes it's not sunshine and roses when you pour yourself out. All right? I guess that's how I get on this. You know what I'm saying? But I think we can't let... I mean, I think that's a valuable lesson. You know, it was for me. You know, there's a valuable lesson, and I think you have to inject some reality into your decision-making process with your generosity and that sort of thing. But overall, I think if we're the type of people who are refreshing people, if we're the type of people who are generous people, our lives are going to be better. Right? And the lives of those we serve, some of them are going to be better. Right? And it is refreshing to refresh others. Because, again, I keep saying this again, because that's the kind of people we were designed to be. Right? That's who we were made to be. And again, this same notion, the generous will themselves be blessed, for they share their food with the poor. And I think there's also a notion here, the generous will themselves be blessed, for they share their food with the poor. I think there's an understanding here that we're not just talking about putting money in a box with all this stuff. I think we're talking about you're actually sharing your life with other people. I think your circle of relationships is meant to increase, right? In 2 Corinthians 9, we've read this a lot before too. Remember this, a farmer who plants only a few seeds will get a small crop, but the one who plants generously will get a generous crop. You must each decide in your heart how much to give. And don't give reluctantly or in response to pressure, for God loves a person who gives cheerfully. And God will generously provide all you need. Then you will always have everything you need and plenty left over to share with others. They share freely and give generously to the poor. Their good deeds will be remembered forever. For God is the one who provides seed for the farmer and the bread to eat. In the same way, He will provide and increase your resources and then produce a great harvest of generosity in you. So with the caveats that we talked about before, about the health and wealth type stuff, and also for the, there's some people who, who's, you know, the, in these oppressed situations or the impoverished, you know, injustice in the world that doesn't always work out this way. But in general, there is this concept. It, you know, comes out and says, if God increases your resources so you can be more generous, right? It says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to sow seeds. You know, sowing plants generously, you know, sow, reap sparing, plants generously will get a generous crop. You know, reap, you know, sow sparingly, he who sows sparingly will reap sparingly. That's not about greed, it's about fear. You're afraid to sow your wheat because those grains may be something you need to eat if this next crop doesn't go well. It says God is the one who provides seed for the farmer and then bread to eat. In the same way, he'll provide and increase your resource and then produce a great harvest of generosity in you. Yes, you will be enriched in every way so that you can always be generous. And we take your gift to those who need them and they will thank God. So two good things will result from this ministry of giving. The needs of believers in Jerusalem will be met and they will joyfully express their thanks to God. And as a result of your ministry, of your service, they will give glory to God. For your generosity to them and to all believers will prove that you are obedient to the good news of Christ. They will pray for you with deep affection because of the overflowing grace God has given to you. There's this positive feedback loop. When you give, these people receive it, you know, with joy. And they praise God and pray to God for you. This positive feedback loop. There's just joy results in more joy, more joy, more joy. And thank God for this gift, too wonderful for words. This gift that we are able to enter in, invited to enter into these sorts of loops. Right? And it is. I mean, if you think about giving in the New Testament context. Yeah, I will make this statement. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong. I think giving in the New Testament context is also associated with joy. Right? With joy. You know, it's fun to be generous. It's fun to give. It's joyful. It brings joy into your life. Huh? Love loves a cheerful giver. That's right. Cheerful is not quite as deep as joy. Is it? Cheerful is happy. It's happy and fun. I mean, you know, and everybody's personality is different. I think your personality is related to this in a way. That some people are very systematic and, you know, about how they go and approaching their budgeting and their resources and all this stuff. And so their giving is going to be systematic and directed. And some people are a little more, you know, free for all, right? So there's different ways of going about, there's different ways of being generous, you know, and all of them are good. And I think all of us can engage in each of them. But just for talking about fun, you know, several weeks ago, we, for whatever reason, we skipped lunch with you guys. I think you're going to the park or something. We went to McDonald's to eat lunch, and we got up to the counter. There's this little girl in there, and instead of just asking what we wanted to eat, you know, she started this conversation, and she said something like, we asked how she was doing. She said, oh, I'm good, but it's going to be a busy week. And she talked about her, something she had at school with a nursing program that she had coming up this week. And then she was going to graduate from this nursing program with this, some sort of certification. You know, she was a Job Corps student. And you could tell by the way she was talking about it, she was really, really, really proud of what she had done. You know, I feel that she had finally got to the end of this program. She had accomplished this. And, you know, she went, and Shelly said, yeah, we were both congratulatory and all this stuff. And she said, yeah, you know, I thought so many times I thought I wasn't going to make it. I was going to leave and go back home, but I just, you know, stuck it out. You know, and she talked about her mom and her some of her family and friends that were coming from Virginia Beach, wherever she was from, Portsmouth, to come to this ceremony, you know, where she gets her certification. And she, you could tell that she was just so happy and so proud of this. So we got our stuff and we sat down and ate. And I was thinking it, but I didn't say it for I don't know why. But Shelly said, you know, I think we should give her a graduation gift. I said, yeah, I think you're right. So as me and Joey sat and ate, Shelly walked over to Walgreens and got a card, and I had some cash, and we put this cash in this card, and it was like not enough cash to like change her life by any stretch of the imagination, but it was like more than just, you know, more than you give your nephew on his, or, you know, on his birthday, right? And And so we waited till we were done eating, and then Shelley handed her the card, and we left, you know, before she opened it. And that's just fun, you know, it's joyful. And like 3 weeks after that, right, Shelley went in to McDonald's by herself, and this girl saw her and was like, come up at the counter, recognize, you know, so this random white girl she met one time, but she recognized her, she remembered that. You know, she was just so elated and so happy, right? I mean, that, what else would you have done with that cash that would have brought you that much enjoyment, you know? You know, I could have saved that and bought something for one of my hobbies, right? That would have brought anywhere near as much joy as that did, right? So as a result of your service, your ministry, people will give glory to God. Your generosity to them and to all believers will prove that you are obedient to the good news of Christ, and they will pray for you with deep affection because of the overflowing grace God has given to you. Thank God for this gift, too wonderful for words. Another, this is probably getting way too long, but that's all right. The righteous care about justice for the poor, but the wicked have no such concern. We circle back around to this another direction. And we talk about the systematic stuff. We have to have concern for the systematic injustices in this world that oppress people, right? We can't always do anything about them, you know, other than pray or maybe take these incremental steps. But we have to have awareness, at least have awareness and concern for these, right? Well, it says it's wicked if you don't have concern. Now, James 5, one of the most chilling passages, and we've read this a bunch. Look here, you rich people, weep and groan with anguish because of all the terrible troubles ahead of you. Your wealth is rotting away, and your fine clothes are moth-eaten rags. Your gold and silver are corroded. The very wealth you were counting on will eat away your flesh like fire. This corroded treasure you have hoarded will testify against you on the day of judgment. For listen, hear the cries of the field workers whom you have cheated of their pay. The cries of those who harvest your fields have reached the ears of the Lord of heaven's armies. I say it's chilling because of, well, the world we live in today. Right, so we have to at least have an awareness of the and concern for these systematic injustices. And you know, sometimes that concern, that awareness, will lead to some decision or some action. Right. So the righteous care about justice for the poor, but the wicked have no such concern. Change gears just a little bit. Okay, this will make sense, I hope, at the end. Ezekiel 16, and this was the sin of your sister Sodom. You guys, most of you guys here, there's nobody new in here, right? So you all heard me talk about this before, right? Anybody remember? Ezekiel 16, what is the sin of your sister Sodom? What is sodomy, right? No, don't answer that question.
Okay.
But what is it should be? All right, we've named a sin after this place, right? This was the sin of your sister Sodom, these cities that God destroyed with fire and brimstone, right? Or sulfur, no, and brimstones, whatever. You know the story. This was the sin of your sister Sodom. And our mind immediately goes to the sexual stuff, right? This was the sin of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters were arrogant, overfed, and unconcerned. Right? They did not help the poor and needy. So this concern that we are to have, you know, just to have this awareness and to have this concern is a huge part of being like God, of being clothed in white. Right? It's an important part of being made like God. They did not help the poor and needy. They were haughty and did detestable things before me. What are detestable things? Now that's when you get into the sexual stuff, right? Think about what are detestable things. Proverbs 6. There are 6 things the Lord hates, 7 that are detestable to him. Okay, these are the big deals, right? Well, you normally think about things that are detestable to God, the rules, right? But this is what God hates. This is what's detestable. Haughty eyes. What does it mean to have haughty eyes? Now, this is not non-rhetorical. I'll answer. What's haughty eyes? Huh?
Proud
of yourself, right?
Oh,
look down on other people, right? It says God hates that. A lying tongue, self-explanatory. Hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that devises wicked schemes. Feet that are quick to rush into evil. False witness who pours out lies. And a person who stirs up conflict in the community. That's what God hates. These are detestable things, right? There are other detestable things in the world, don't get me wrong, but this is the list that it gives in Proverbs 6. What do all these have to do with each other? One thing that strikes me about this list, it all has to do with how we treat or interact with other people. It's all related to relationships with other people, right?
Superiority.
Superiority, right. Injustice, yeah.
It's like a politician.
It is, absolutely. Not just one politician, all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm not saying you said that, but yeah, I think we can all think of one politician, but I mean all of them. This is politics. All right? It says God hates this stuff. Person who stirs up conflict in the community, in the family, the person who stirs up conflict is just detestable to God. So how we treat each other within our community, within our family, how we treat and how we relate to other people around us is incredibly important. I think about Romans 12. And this is kind of that list of what it looks like to be a Christian or what it looks like to be being made right, to being clothed in white. Spiritual formation, right? Don't just pretend to love others. Really love them. Hate what is wrong. Hold tightly to what is good. Love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. That's kind of the opposite of that list we just looked at, right? Never be lazy, but work hard and serve the Lord enthusiastically. Rejoice in our confident hope. Be patient in trouble and keep on praying. When God's people are in need, be ready to help them. Always be eager to practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Don't curse them and pray that God will bless them. Be happy with those who are happy and weep with those who weep. I don't know why that was so, you know, far forward in my mind this morning when I was putting this PowerPoint together, but it's not just the sunshine and roses part. You know, being a community and being a family of people, you know, requires not dismissing other people's pain and other people's trouble, right? We have to enter into that pain and those troubles, whatever they are, with our brothers and sisters. That's living in harmony with each other, right? It's about sharing and helping in those times of emotional and relational need. It's about being generous to those people who need emotional, relational, spiritual comfort or need these gifts from us in their times of trouble. Don't be too proud to enjoy the company of ordinary people. And don't think you know it all. Never pay back evil with evil. Do things in such a way that everyone can see you are honorable. Do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. Don't let evil conquer you, but conquer evil by doing good. I'll think about this. I'll tell another story about Shelley since she's not here. Never pay back evil with more evil. She was... I don't know how much to say, but she's not here to defend herself. That's all right. She was in this class, had a horrible experience. She was a horrible person. Like, from beginning to end, there's a horrible person that she, like, interacted with, right? And this person, leader of this conference, this class, like, publicly shamed Shelley. Okay, like, yeah, I don't want to, like, give up. She'll tell the whole story, but it's like this, a public, like, this literal call to the whole class to attention, literally, and like shame my wife, right? Because she put these aluminum cans in the trash can, not the recycling bin, which was out back and no one was aware of, right? Okay. So you imagine as a husband how I react to that. How's that make you feel? Yeah, it made me really mad. And of course, it just really hurt Shelley. So Shelley came back and so like I said, from beginning, that wasn't it. That was just kind of the capstone. Beginning to end, it's a terrible experience at this place. So Shelley came back, left class early, came home, and left a review on Google about this place that was, I thought, pretty, it was pointed for sure, but factual. You know, at the end, it was maybe a little, you know, still not bad. At the end, it was the only time she like entered an opinion into it. She said, I would never leave my child with this woman, and neither should you, you know, at the end of this Google review. And I was okay. I was cool with that, right? Shelly was too for about a day. This morning, she's thinking, she said, you know, I sent that woman an email, and I told her that that I think she could benefit from thinking about my perspective. I think her business would benefit from thinking about how she treats people, thinking about it from my perspective. But that she shouldn't have, that she should have done it a whole lot differently, that she was very sorry. My wife did. Because she was in tears because this morning because she was thinking about that she had taken it just a little too far, that she had retaliated, you know, with her statement. And I thought, you know, that's pretty cool. You know, because my first reaction is when somebody, you know, my first reaction would have been to, you know, go down there and, you know, initiate some violence, right? But my reaction, if you offend me, you have no idea what you've done. You know, I'm smart enough to really offend you. You know, I have these you know, you have no idea who you're messing with, right? If you've been mean, I can, you know, I'll call the Better Business Bureau, right? There's never payback evil for evil. That's not what we do. That's not what we do. Do things in such a way that everyone can see you are honorable. And do all that you can, as far as it depends on you, another way of rendering this, do all that you can to live in peace with everyone. Don't let evil conquer you, but conquer evil by doing good.